Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Eruvin Daf Kuf. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur three lines from the top of Daf Kuf, the Dibur Maskil quote from the Mishnah, Shorashov Gevoin Min Ha'oretz. The Mishnah taught that if a tree has roots that protrude above ground more than three tefachim, so one is not allowed to sit on them. We have on the side of our Gemara a nose, a topic heading, Shimush b'shoroshei ilon, the use of a tree's roots, haboltim me'al ha'lakarka, that protrude above surface. One issue or example will be pochos migimel, less than three tefachim above ground. Bays Yoser Migimel, more than three tefachim above ground. And the Gimel case, the third case, are tree roots that curve, and hence they're Boim Mi Lamalo Mishlosha, Vodar Miskoifim Lamato Mishlosha. They rise to a height of more than three tefachim, and then bend over and descend to within three tefachim. As we mentioned in our previous year, there is a rabbinic prohibition of using trees, what we call mishtamish b'ilon, for fear of one coming to break off a branch for some purpose on Shabbos. Now, breaking off a branch is an isur d'oraisa. So the Rabbanan imposed a rabbinic restriction telling us not even to use a tree. But a tree is that which is more than three tefachim from the ground. When you have something less than three tefachim from the ground, so that's considered part of the ground and not considered having the legal status of a tree. Let us now turn to the Gemara. Before learning the Gemara, let's have the Pirush Chai, the Book of Illustrations, available, and have it turned right now to page 218. And we'll be looking at diagrams 32 and shortly at diagram 33 as well. So you see a tree with a tree root protruding above ground, and there's a marker indicating that this is more than three tefachim. And it's also a curved root. So now the Gemara, Itmar, Shorashei Ilon Haboim Milamalo Mishlosha L'toch Shlosha. So that you see in illustration 32, you can see where the base is. That's an example of a tree root that came from above three and that descended to within three. Rabo Omar Mutu Lishtamesh Bohen. Rav Sheshes Omar, also Lishtamish Bohen. So you have a machlokis between Rabo and Rav Sheshes, whether you're allowed to use that. Rabo Omar Mutur Lishtamish Bohen. Rabo says one is allowed. The Chol Pochos Mishlosha, the Aro He. Anything that's within three tefachim of the ground is considered the ground, and hence not restricted by the tree use restriction. Rav Sheshes Omar Osur Lishtamish Bohen. One is forbidden to use them. The Kevan de Mikoach Isur Kasi, since it comes from a source of restriction. Koach literally means comes from the strength of prohibition. So Asurin, they are Osur. And what do we mean they come from the strength or from the Koach of Isur? Because that it's right now it's true that point of the root is within three tefachim, but just follow it back up and you'll see that it comes from something above three tefachim. We continue, and now we are turning to illustration 33. We have a basic root that extends upwards to above three tefachim. However, there are protrusions from that root, each one having its own dimension, its own classification. And that's what the Gemara features. Didomu kimashunisa. The root has this shape to it. It looks like if you have a good imagination, so you can see the root looking like a mountain peak where it rises to a to a summit, and then it slopes downwards. So, Mashumisa literally is a rocky mountain, a rock formation, which is narrow at the top and slopes down. So we have three examples, or three situations in this one case. The Salkin Li'ila Asurim. The Salkin Li'ila means literally that which rises upwards. However, for our purposes, that's the Aleph. In other words, where it's totally above three Tvachim. The section, or the protrusion, that's totally above three is forbidden, according to everybody, even Rabbah. The Nachtin L'Tatoi Sharu. The lowest one, in other words, that which is completely within three Tvachim, and you can see that is the bays in the diagram. Everyone agrees that that's mutter to use. Litzdovin, the gimel in that diagram, which is part above, part below, that is plukto derabo v'rav sheshes. That conforms to the machlokus we saw before, where it comes from above and descends to below. The difference between this case and the case before is that in this case, these protuberances are, each one is considered having its own identity, even though it originates in an original root that happens to have extended above three. Nevertheless, we're entitled to view these protrusions as if they have their own identity. Continuing in the Gemara, v'chein anigra v'chein b'keren zovis. We look at illustrations 34 and 35. When illustration 34, it's the middle picture on page 219 at the top row of pictures, you have a tree, or tree stump. For our purposes, we're considering it a tree, growing forth from a ditch. Part of it is, if you measure it from the ground, from the bottom of the ditch, you'll come out to one statistic. If you measure it from the banks, you'll come out to a different statistic. And similarly, with regard to the Keren Zovis, which is illustration 35, Keren Zovis literally means growing in a corner. We take a look at the Rashi, V'chein Anigro. Rashi, you see across from here, more or less. Ilan hayotze mitoch ritz kotzar, a tree that's growing forth from a small ditch, a narrow ditch. Asui lahonich mayim lusados, the ditch is designed to serve as an irrigation ditch, drawing water, carrying water to the fields. Ushnei tzidei ha'ilan shel tzad gidudei acharitz nichnosen begidudav. The two sides of the tree that are opposite the banks enter the banks, are inserted in, or grow into the banks. The im bo limdog mitzdotin shebesochem neger, hare hu gavoa shlosha v'yoser. If you were to measure the height of this from the bed, from the bottom, the floor of the ditch, you will be measuring from there till the top more than three tvachim. V'im bo limdod mitzdodov hashniim shehein migidudei hacharitz ulamalo ein gavoa shlosha. If you measure things from the banks till the top, you will find there's less than three tvachim. L'rabo modeg me hagidudim v'shori. Rabo, in evaluating, can I use the top of this stump? Rabo will say, well, let's measure from the banks, and he will come out to less than three tvachim. The chol pochus mishlosh la'aro ki'aro. Anything that's within three of the ground is viewed as the ground, and hence it's allowed to be used. L'rav sheshes. Of Sheshis, we saw before with regard to the bent tree root, he looks at where things come from. So Rav Sheshis, who measures Me'onko Modein, Vare Gavoa Shlosho Mikoch Isura Asu. Rav Sheshis says when we look at the entire picture, we look at it as something originating from below, from more than three tvachim downwards, so that the height of this is more than three tvachim, even though from the side where the bank is, maybe it's less, but it's something that grew forth from a depth of more than three tvachim, and therefore usur. And similarly with the case of the Keren Zovis, as we described. Let us continue in the Gemara. Hahu Dikla, we're looking at illustration 37. We see a person has a house, and a tree is growing from the floor of the house up through a skylight in the roof. And at that point, the tree comes to its maximum height. And we now continue in the Gemara. Hahu Dikla, a palm tree, Dahavet La'abaye, that was owned by Abaye, Vahavet Solik Be'ipuma, it was rising through the skylight, Ipuma, the skylight. Asla Kamed Rav Yosef, the case came to Rav Yosef's attention, Vishorole, and he says, you can use the branches, you can sit on the tree that's coming up through the skylight. As we say, that was its the maximum height of the tree was there. And Rav Yosef says, well, okay, you can, at that point, you can use it. The Omar Rav Acho Bar Tachlifa, the Shoraloch, Rav Acho says that he who granted permission for this, Kirabo Shoraloch, his heter is based on Rabo. In other words, he doesn't look at where the tree originates, he looks at where you are. And relative to where you are, the tree height from the floor to where to the top of the tree is of a negligible amount. It's less than 3 tefachim, paying no attention to the fact that the tree itself grew from a depth that's much greater. Well, that approach is like Rabba. The Gemara says Pshita. Rav Acha is saying something that seems to be obvious. The Gemara answers, Ma'u detem afilu l'Rav Sheshes. One might have thought that the case of the palm that was owned by Abaye would be allowed even according to Rav Sheshes, based on a svara, based on an analysis that we've seen in the past, Beso Keman Demoli Domi, that the house is considered full, which would then mean that the house is like underground, and only above, and only at the roof is the first time that the tree is emerging. And therefore, v'lishtamesh b'pochos migimel somoch l'gag. And according to Rav Sheshes, if you look at the house as molly, as filled with dirt, if you will, so then you would be allowed to use the part of the tree that's within 3 tefachim of the roof, according to even Rav Sheshes. Komash Mulan, Rav Acha comes to tell me that the heter here that Rav Yosef issued was only according to Rabba. And even though there exists a svara in halacha of Beis HaKaman Demoli Domi, we're not applying that here in this analysis. Tanan, there is a source that says in our Mishnah, Shorashav Gua Min Aretz Gimel Tvachim Lo Yeshev Aleihem. Tree roots that rise to more than 3 tefachim, one shall not sit on them. Hechi domi, what are the circumstances? Idelo hadri kifi, if they don't bend over and downwards, in other words, they rise and simply continue rising to more than 3 tefachim above the ground in an upward fashion, then pshita, that's obvious that it's also to sit on them. Elolav, rather, for the Mishnah to have a chidush in it, we have to say afogav dehadri kifi, that the tree roots that are prohibited in the Mishnah are tree roots that bent down within to within 3 tefachim, and it's telling me that such tree roots cannot be used, and that's not like Rabba, because Rabba was telling you that if the tree root bends over from a height of more than 3 tefachim down to within 3 tefachim, you can use that part of the root. Yet our Mishnah, in order to have a chiddush, would be saying you cannot use it. Loi, the Gemara responds, not so. Le'olam de lo hadri kifi. The Mishnah is talking about a case where the tree root just rises; it doesn't bend. It doesn't bend. Bend down. Veha komash mulon, and the Mishnah is telling us afagav detzido echod shava la'aretz. The case that the Mishnah is featuring is something like something that you would see in diagram 38 or in 36. We can say is a case of tzido echod shavol oretz, where one side and only one side is equal to the ground. So, if you look in diagram 36, you can see such a situation. You can, as we said, you can also see this in 38, where only one part of the tree root is at the level of the ground, where the rest of it is exposed more than three, leaving a gap of more than three tefachim. So in a case like that, if tzido echad, literally one side alone, is at the ground's height, only in such a case, even Rabbah will agree to a restriction. This idea of tzido echad shavuot, you see in other illustrations here as well. You see this in illustration 39, where tree roots are coming from below and rising next to a elevated portion of land, but only on one side. We continue in the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, Shoroshei Ilon Shigvoim in Oret Shoshu Tvachim, tree roots that are more than three tvachim above ground. Oshiesh Chalal Tachteim Shloshu Tvachim. This we see in illustration 38. Chalal is a gap, a space that is three tvachim deep. So that's the case of Chalal Tachteim Shloshu Tvachim. Even though you have one side at ground level, and that you can see in illustration 39, where you can see the Aleph and Beis are attempting to illustrate that. So even though you have that, one shall not sit on them. So one doesn't sit on tree roots rising above three tefachim, with a or tree roots that have a gap underneath them, a depth of three tefachim, or the illustration of tzido echad alone shave laoretz lefi she'ein oilin be'ilan. This is a general rabbinic restriction that one is not allowed to climb trees with a nitlin be'ilan, nor suspend things from trees, or hang from a tree. Ve'ein nishonin be'ilan, and one is not even to lean on a tree. One is not to ascend a tree on Friday. Mibodyo means before Shabbos sets in. One shall not climb the tree on Friday with the intention of remaining there all of Shabbos. Echad ilon vechad kol habehema. Whether you're talking about a tree or talking about other animals for that matter, one is not allowed to ride animals on Shabbos. So one cannot make a plan to ride, to go on the animal on Friday and stay there the rest of Shabbos. Avol bor shiach umaora v'goder. However, other structures like a pit, and a shiach is another type of pit, and a maora also a cave type depression. V'goder, a wall. Metapes v'oila metapes v'yorid. There one can scramble up it and scramble down. In other words, you can scale the walls of a pit, or scale a wall. There are no branches to break off. That's the difference. And it's, as Rashi says, the issue in this Tanaic source is not an issue of effort, exertion. Leaning on a tree doesn't involve any effort, but it rather involves the chashash that you might come to break off a branch. That's applicable to a tree, not to a pit. And hence, this source tells us metapes v'oila metapes v'yorin v'afilu hein meo amo. Even if the pit is 100 amas deep, or the wall is 100 amas tall, we look at the side of our Gemara where we have a topic heading and a structural note as well. So the topic heading, we already started this topic, Isur Shtamshus Bilin B'Shabbos, the prohibition of using a tree on Shabbos. And when we speak, by the way, about using a tree, this includes taking things off a tree that may have been hung from the tree Erev Shabbos. You can't take it off. You can't take it off the tree on Shabbos. And point number two, which we are about to start, is Yishuv Stira Bein Shnei Brisos. An attempt to resolve a resolution between two Tanaic sources. Im olamah shiri. Let's say a person did go up, can he come down? So there are two brises that seem to contradict one another, and then there will be three answers that follow. So the Gemara. Tani Chada, and the double underline emphasizes the two sources. Tani Chada, one source says, Im Ola Mutur Leirid, if you ascended, you can come down. The Tani Chada, another source says, Osur Leirid, that if you went up, you cannot come down. And when we speak about coming down, we're talking, of course, about coming down on Shabbos. There's a Rashi that says on the in the wide lines under the Gemara, fourth line under the Gemara, Im Allah Be'ilan Osu Leireid, the Chol Derech Yiridasa U'Mishtamish B'Mechubar. The descent from a tree is also a form of using the tree, and that's called using the that which is Mechubar, a tree attached to the ground, attached and living, growing from the ground. So let us now proceed to the resolutions. Lo kashya, no problem. Kan mi ba'od yoyim, kan mi shechashecha. One is talking about a case where he went up the tree on Friday, and Shabbos said in while he was already on the tree. So regarding that case, we will tell him he can come down. However, if he ascended the tree on Shabbos per se, so we say you started off doing something wrong, so stay there. Both sources are talking about his ascending from darkness. The source that says you're allowed to come down is where he ascended the tree, not realizing that it was something prohibited, or not realizing that it was Shabbos. And the source that says he cannot go is where everything was done intentionally, an intentional violator. The third resolution is both sources are talking about someone having ascended on Shabbos in shogeg, in a state of shogeg, in without intention. And here, the difference between the two sources is, do we impose a fine or a restriction on someone that, albeit us did it unintentionally, but we will impose a restriction otu, in anticipation of a person violating intentionally. Mor Savar Kansinon, the source number two says we shall impose such a restriction, even though he was shogeg. Mor Savar Lo Kansinon, and source one would say we don't impose that restriction, or that fine, if you will. We continue in the Gemara with a point. This point lasts a number of lines. We have also a marking that we want to turn our attention to by looking under the Mivneh heading, where a triangle is featured. Kitanoi, highlights the expression Kitanoi, which is a nisayon, an attempt, v'hashvoi shnei ha-braisos shel Ola be'ilon. The two braises we just read, the Gemara will make an attempt to align them, Kitanoi, like a machlok, another machlok is tanoim b'matnas dam, regarding the application of sacrificial blood to the mizbeach, to the altar sitting in the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash. So, for the time being, we're going to enter a different realm. We're going to enter the realm of korbanos, of kachim, and blood applications, and more specifically, a case where bloods of two different sacrifices get mixed up. In general, one should be aware that different sacrifices have different rules regarding the number of blood applications that one is obligated to do in order to fulfill the mitzvah of zrikas adam, the casting of the blood of sacrifices on the mizbeach. In this source, we will make reference to a Bechor, it's a firstborn male animal that is one is expected to offer hand over to a Kohen who brings it as a sacrifice. That happens to have a single blood application. We call that matnas echon or matona achas. And we'll also make reference to a chatos, a sin offering that has four blood applications, each application to one of the four corners of the mizbeach. As we go into the Gemara, The Gemara, as we said, will attempt to parallel the machlokas we already saw regarding someone who went up a tree. Do we tell him just sit there until the end of Shabbos, or do we say get down? We're going to try to parallel that, and that will be a long point, a nekuda, a long point in the Gemara. That's the nun that you see encircled to the side of the Gemara text. And then the Gemara will reject the parallel, and it will reject it, and we will illustrate that with two inverted triangles, taking each one of the tanoim in the blood source, showing how they will not be paralleled as we did. So we'll see in this source Rabbi Eliezer, and we'll see Rabbi Yeshua, and we'll take each one of them and show how they don't necessarily parallel that which we said in the case of the ascent and descent from a tree on Shabbos. So after pointing out the general structure, first we have a long point, and then we have a long dechia, a long rejection, and that will take us to the second line from the top of Amud Beis. So now the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna Rei Rav Yeshua Kitanoi. The machlokis that we saw in Toni Chado and Toni Chado, the two Tanaic sources, im ola, should you, is it mutter leirate or not, will parallel the following machlokis tanoim. Hanitnin b'matona achas, shinisarvu b'nitnin b'matona achas. Blood from, let's say, you have two firstborn animal sacrifices, and they were slaughtered. The blood was received in a receiving vessel, but the two vessels, one spilled one into the other, so now you have two korbanos. They happen to be the same type of korban, but they're two separate sacrifices, and their blood got mixed up. What do you do now with regard to the number of blood applications? So the source says, Yinosnu b'matona achas. You make one single blood application. We say that this contained a representation of blood from both sacrifices. And hence the one application counts for both b'choros that were there. Another mixture case, matan dalid b'matan dalid. Two people brought two sin offerings, and their bloods got mixed up. Hinosnu b'matan achad. You do one series of blood, of four blood applications, and that counts for both sacrifices. So you have a total of four blood applications. So far, that's pretty streamlined. Here is where we start getting interested. In other words, the following case will present a machlokes to us. Matan arba b'matan achas. Imagine you had one, there was a sin offering, and there was a b'chor there. And the bloods of these two sacrifices got mixed up. So that you have some of the blood would have needed four applications, and some of the blood only one application. What do you do now? Rabbi Elazar Omer, Yinosnu b'matan dalet. Rabbi Elazar says, do four sprinklings of the blood. Well, if you do four, so you're going to be fulfilling the chatas requirement, and amongst those sprinklings there was also b'chor blood. And you'll be fulfilling the b'chor application requirement as well. It is true that in the case of the b'chor, you might in fact be, in those four applications, you're doing three more than is necessary vis-a-vis the b'chor, but that's Rebbe Lezer's opinion, which we'll see more about that shortly. Rebbe Yehoshua Omer, Yinosnu b'matona achas. Of all the blood that's there, one single blood application, and that is all you do. Omar lo Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Lezer says to Rabbi Shua, Hareu over al Bal Tigra. Following your method of just one blood application, so you are guilty of diminishing or reducing Tigra. Gorua or Gora is to subtract. And the Torah tells us that you're not allowed to add nor subtract from the mitzvos. A Jew is expected to be, fulfill the rules of the Torah as they are dictated, not more, not less. If you have just like anything in life, there are. If you have a recipe and the recipe calls for 2 cups of flour, don't put 1 cup and don't put 3 cups, just 2. Follow it. That's the way you will achieve success. So what are you doing over here by just doing one blood application? You have three more to do as far as the chatos is concerned. Well, that's what Rabbi Eliezer's argument against Rabbi Yeshua is. Omar lo, Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua turns to Rabbi Eliezer and says, Harehu over al Baal Tosif. Following your method of four applications, you're doing three more to the Bechor blood that's there than is necessary. And that is also prohibited, as we just said. You're not allowed to add to the rules of the Torah either. And blood, Bechor blood applications call for one, not for four. Omar Rabbi Eliezer, Loi Omru Elo Kishu Batzmo. Rabbi Eliezer says that the Isser of Baal Tosif is only when something is in isolation. If you had a cup of Bechor blood alone, and you, instead of doing one application, you do another three, do a total of four, that would be the Isser of Baal Tosif. But here it's in a state of mixture with the Chatas blood, so there's no problem. Omar lo Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua responds, defending his position, where he said, you apply the mixture only once, lo ne'amar bal tigra, elo kishu ba'atzmo. So Rabbi Yeshua argues, but here you'll see there are 2 points he mentions. Number one, as far as your argument against me, that there's an isser of bal tigra, that's not so, because that would be true only if you had chatas blood by itself, and you did only one application, when you are expected to do more. However, here it's not ba'atzmo, it's not in isolation. And second point, v'oid, Omer Rabbi Yeshua, kishe nosata ovarto al bal toisif, v'yosisa maisi biyodecha. Following your approach, says Rabbi Yeshua to Rabbi Eliezer, you, Rabbi Eliezer, who said, do four applications, not only are you doing more than the Torah requires vis-a-vis the Bechor, but you're doing it in an action form. In other words, your violation is by positive action, by the act of doing three more blood applications, as far as the Bechor blood in that mixture is concerned. However, following my approach, kishelona sato, if you would have done only one, and your problem might be with the chatas blood that's in the mixture, fine, avata al tigra. There is the possible problem of doing less. However, at least you didn't do so in an active fashion. Below asisa maisi biodecha, you remain passive. In other words, you did one and you did not do the additional ones. So, in the worst case scenario, granted you minimized the number, but you didn't do it so in an active fashion. So that if you have to weigh two possibilities, one against the other, it's better to be a violator in a passive sense than in an active sense. So now, having learned the Machlokes Tanoim regarding Matnas Dam, let's tie that into our case of the Im Ola, if he ascended the tree, can he come down? The Rebbe Lezer, Omar Hossam Kuma Sei Odif, according to Rebbe Lezer, who said by the case of the blood application problem, then it's better to solve a problem through active measures. So, Hochinami Yereid. So too, in the case of someone who ascended the tree on Shabbos, we will tell him, get down. That would be, what are we doing then? We're paralleling Rebbe Lezer with source number one above, where we had the double underlines, Tani Chada Imola Mutter Leireid. Rabbi Yeshua, who in the case of the blood mixture solved the problem by in a passive fashion. The Omar Hossam, in the case of blood, he said, shave the altase, or the better to sit and not do anything, meaning remain passive. Hochinami lo yereid. So to here, in the case of the tree, if you ascended the tree, just stay there, stay put. The Gemara says, Dilma Lohi, maybe this parallel is not accurate. Ad kan lo koma Rebbe Lezer Hossam. There, Rebbe Lezer said in the case of the bloods, do four applications. There he says, kum ase odif, elo de ko'ovid mitzvah. There, through your action, by doing those extra three applications, you are fulfilling the mitzvah requirement of the chatos. You're doing a mitzvah while you are functioning in an active capacity. Abohocha, in this case, with regard to the tree telling a person, get down from the tree, the lo ovid mitzvah, he's not doing a mitzvah, he's simply distancing himself from continue aveira, but he's not doing a mitzvah. So hochi nami lo yereid. So maybe in such a case where all that he's accomplishing, he's not accomplishing a mitzvah in a positive sense, he's simply removing himself from an offense, maybe Rabbi Elazar would say, remain passive. V'inami, likewise, ad kan lokum Rabbi Yeshua hasam. Rabbi Yeshua, in the case of blood, said what he did. Just do one blood application, shave, v'atasi odif, and prefer the passive approach. Why? Elo, the low, and we're at the top of Amud Beis, the low ka'ovid isura. There, when he, but with regard to the blood, where he simply sits and doesn't do more than one, so he's not actively doing an isur. He's, if he does just one blood application of that b'chor chatos mixture and stops after one, so that's it. He's not doing any isur. So being that he's not doing any isur, that's what Rabbi Yeshua, that's why Rabbi Yeshua says what he does over there by the blood. Avalacha, in the case of the tree, the ka'ovid isura, the continued sitting on the tree. If you sit there and continue sitting there throughout Shabbos, you are continuing the violation of an avera. So hachinami diere. So Rabbi Yeshua would tell you, get off the tree. So what we thought before was to say that Rabbi Elazar would be the opinion to say get off the tree. It could very well be quite the opposite, that Rabbi Yeshua would be the one to say get off the tree. So at this point, then the attempted paralleling the two sources to the Machlokes Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is rejected. We continue in the Gemara. We have two Tanaic sources, and you can see we've highlighted them with a double underline. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, a topic heading with a structural note. You'll see shortly there are two house, there are house markings that appear. These are Shnei Shlovim Letaret Stira Be'inyan Shimush Be'ilun Yovesh. We'll see two stages in trying to resolve the what appears to be a contradiction between two sources regarding the use of an Ilon Yovesh, a dry tree. And Rashi on the second line from the top says, Yovesh Shein Bo Lichluach, the tree has no more freshness to it, it's dried out, Velo Velav Mechuberhu, it's not considered attached, even though something is physically attached, but legally it's not considered attached. Toni Chado, one Tanaic source states, Echod Ilon Lach Ve'echod Ilon Yovesh. Whether it's a lach, literally means damp, but it means a fresh tree, or it's a dried out tree, they are both under the tree use restriction. V'tanya idach, another source says, Bamed v'amurim, when is the restriction in effect? That's belach, if it's a living tree. Aval b'yovesh, if it's dry, then mutter. The Gemara has now presented it its contradiction, and now we go on to the resolution. Omar Rav Yehuda lo kashya kan b'shegizo machlif kan b'she'ein gizo machlif. First, we'll translate, and the obvious question will follow in the Gemara itself. But the case that would be forbidden is gizo machlif, where it regenerates itself. In other words, it's a living tree that when you break off a branch from it, something grows back. And the other source is talking about a case where it's a dead tree, ein gizo machlif, it doesn't grow back. The Gemara asks, gizo machlif yovesh koris lei? In the case of, let's say, source number one, it said, echod ilon lach ve'echod ilon yovesh, and it says both are usur, and in that source, we're saying, also an Ilon Yovesh, and you're telling us that that's talking about a type of tree that's Gizoi Machlif. Well, if it's Gizo Machlif, why do you call it a dried out? It's not dried out. Elo Lo Kashya, rather, let's resolve the sources as follows. Kan Bimois Achamo, Kan Bimois Akshomim. In the case of Yemos Achamo, if it's the summer season, the summer season is when trees are in full bloom. If you see a tree that's dried out in the summer, that is a sign that it is truly dead. And there's not, if someone is leaning on it or climbing it, there is not even maris ayin. There isn't even a mistaken impression that is created that you're dealing with a living tree. This is a truly, truly an obvious dead tree. Kandi moisak shomim, this is a reference to a dead tree or a dry tree, but in the wintertime when all trees, even living trees, appear, they're leafless, they appear to be dead. So we don't allow you to use any kind of tree, even a totally dead tree, during the winter. And the reason for that is, as we said, because of the problematic impression it could create in the eyes of people. The Gemara continues, b'moisachama, what in the summer season, how can you matir using the tree? Ha nasri peri, if there are fruits on the tree, fruits that were left from last year, are they not going to possibly fall, or you're going to cause them to fall off? Nasri is to fall off. So that you shouldn't be allowed to use the tree in anticipation of your coming to picking off the fruits, or causing them to fall off the tree. So the Gemara answers, "Bidaleko peri." We're talking about a dried tree in the summertime that doesn't have any fruits on it. Question, "Bahal konasri kinsi," but is there not the problem that you're going to cause twigs to fall off? If we allow you to use it, you're going to cause twigs to fall off. So the Gemara says, "Begeduda." Geduda is illustrated in the Pirush Chai 41, you'll see that on page 220, the upper right-hand corner of the page, where you don't have any twigs either. It's just a central trunk. Before we go on in the Gemara, there is a Rashi on the third line from the top that dealt with the fruits falling off the tree. Konasri peri, shenisharu bo mishona shavra, v'osi lemishri bei tlisha. And if you cause the fruits to fall out, to fall off, you might come to allow the actual removal of fruits from a tree that is lach. The lach nihi dalia diyovesh otu aliyah delach lo gazrinan. Granted that we don't prohibit the ascent on a totally dry tree because of you're coming to ascend a fresh tree, the gufo gzera, because the ascending of a fresh tree itself is only a rabbinic prohibition. Miu tlisha atu tlisha nigzar. However, the fear of removal of fruits in the case of the dry tree, we should impose a gzera atu. You're coming to remove fruits from a fresh tree. So the Gemara answered the issue of the fruit removal by telling us that the dry tree that we are talking about doesn't have fruits, and also it doesn't have any branches or twigs growing forth from it either. As Rashi suggested that had it had either the fruits or possibly these twigs, we would have made a gzera, don't use the dry tree in anticipation of your coming to do the same in the case of the fresh tree. The Gemara asks, Eini v'ha rav iklo l'afsatya. He went to a place called Afsatya, to Osar b'geduda, and he said to the people there, he ruled that they cannot even use a geduda. The Gemara says, don't ask from the case of Rav. That was a specific, special circumstance, because we're dealing there with a population of people that were, generally speaking, lax with halachic maintenance. And that's called a bika. Rav bika motza v'godar bogeder. It's an expression. Literally, it would mean he found an open field and built a fence, but it's not to be translated literally, but rather he found a community of people that were not b'nei Torah. They weren't people who were diligent in their mitzvah fulfillment, and therefore he had to impose a restriction beyond the general realm of prohibition. As we go on in the Gemara, we will encounter a diamond which highlights Maimros made by Rami Bar Chama. Omar Rami Bar Chama, Omar Rav Asi. Osir Lodom Shalich Al Gabi Asovim B'Shabbos. Here we're going to talk about a new Isser, and that is prohibition, of, at least in Rami Bar Chama's mind, the prohibition of walking on grass on Shabbos. And when we speak about the walking on grass on Shabbos, so the immediately comes to mind the problem of ripping them out, ripping out the grass, which of course is prohibited to rip out rip out grass on Shabbos. So Rami Bar Chama says in the name of Rav Asi, Osur L'Odom Shachal Gabi Yosov M'Shabbos. It's osur, it's forbidden to walk on grasses on Shabbos. Mishum Shinema. The pasuk says, Ve'otz Biraglayim Chote. Now the pasuk that we just quoted in Mishle begins, and we have this quoted on the side of our Gemara. It says, Gam Belo Das Nefesh Lo Tov. Ve'otz Biraglayim Chote. So the pasuk describes someone who is doing something, even though he seems to be unaware, but nevertheless he is sinning through walking. And this idea of sinning through walking is what Rami Bar Chama is alluding to. And what is the sin? The ripping out of the grasses. And once again, we see the double underline which highlights what appears to be contradictory sources. Tani Chada, Mutur Lele Chagabi Yasov B'Shabbos. One source says that you're allowed to walk on grass on Shabbos. V'Tanya Idoch Osir. And the other source says it's forbidden. Well, are they not contradictory? And in order to resolve this problem, we have several answers, and they're highlighted with our markings with the triangles. And on the side, under our Nosei Mivne heading, you can see we've featured a triangle, and we've written five Tirutzim Liashiv Stira, five answers to resolve the contradiction binyan halicha gabi asov b'Shabbos regarding walking on grass on Shabbos. So let's continue. Number one, lo kashya ha belachim ha b'yaveshim. Now we have little letters that we drew into the Gemara. They represent the two sources. The source base that said usher, that's referring to fresh grass. And the aleph is talking about dried out grass. And hence there is no problem, as we saw before, that if something is completely dried out, even though it's physically attached, it's not considered legally attached. And hence, there is no violation of detaching something from where it grows. Another approach says both sources are talking about fresh grass. The second source that spoke about a prohibition is talking about during the summer season. And Rashi adds a little more to this and says that in the summer season, you're causing the Bimos Chamo. Rashi says, the Rashi, you notice there's a double star in the Rashi that we have in our Rashi column. Zera Yesh Begivolim Umashiron. There are seeds in the grass, and you are causing the seeds to fall out. And that is not the case b'moyis hakshomim, in the winter season. Another approach says both sources are talking about the summer season. The source that says it's allowed is talking about someone who's walking with shoes on. And the source that says he is prohibited is he doesn't have shoes, he's walking barefoot. And the problem there is that the grass can get caught between one's toes, and he will thereby be ripping out the grass. B-boy Seima, another approach says, ha v'ha b'desim asane. Both sources are talking about someone wearing shoes. V'lo kashio de'isbe uktzi, ha de'les le'be le'uktzi. There are different kinds of shoes. There are some kind of shoes that have uktzi on them. Uktzi would be some type of hooks or protrusions from the shoe itself that would get entangled with the grass and cause the grass to be ripped out. And the other is a smooth shoe, less le uksi, and then hence it would be mutter to walk on the grass. V'boy seimo ha v'ha de is le uksi. Both sources are talking about shoes with uksi on them. Ha de is le sarcha, ha de les le sarcha. Rashi says, sarcha psila aruka sha esev oruch. Oroch. Osir. If the grass is sarcha, meaning it's growing long, that will likely become entangled with the uktzi on the shoes. However, if it's short stubble type grass, then even if the shoes have uktzi, there's nothing to become entangled to the shoe, and hence it will be mutter. Ve'idno, the kaimalon kribishim, and the Gemara now points out, ve'idno means nowadays. This is a point in time where there was a unanimous acceptance of Rabbi Shimon's approach to these kind of halachas, the kaimalon Rabbi Shimon, that we hold like Rabbi Shimon, who holds that things that are done without intention, which is called davar she'ein miskaven, an action, though the result in action might be a prohibited type result, but in the course of your behavior or of your action, you had no intention for that. Kulhu shari, all of these cases will be allowed. In other words, you can walk with cleated shoes on Shabbos, walking on long grass. Because even in the case that the grass gets ripped out, you had no intention for that. Your intention was simply to walk from one place to another. The Omar Rami Bar Chama, the diamond indicates another statement of Rami Bar Chama's, in the name of Omar Ravasi, quoting again Ravasi, Osu l'odem shiyochuf ishto l'dvar mitzvah. One is prohibited to force his wife to the act of intimacy. Shinemar, v'otz b'raglayim chote. Now, in this pasuk, the word raglayim is taken to mean intimacy, and Rashi proves that from a pasuk in Sefer Shoftim, in the book of Judges, where the term legs is used in the context of intimacy. So this pasuk is saying the otz b'raglayim chote, taken to mean that one who pressures or forces his wife to intimacy is a sinner. The Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi call a kufa ishto l'dvar mitzvah havion lo bon. Bonim Shainon Mehuganim. Rabbi Yeshua carries this a step further and says that the results will be dismal as well. That one who forces his wife to Dvar Mitzvah is the act of intimacy. Intimacy itself with one's wife is an act of mitzvah. This is one of the beautiful aspects of Judaism, where you take something, an act that seems to be so earthly, as the act of intimacy, and yet it's termed a Dvar Mitzvah. It's considered a fulfillment of the will of Hashem. So the Gemara continues after Rabbi Shua ben Levi's telling us that one who forces his wife to the Dvar Mitzvah, he'll have Bonim Sheinam Mehuganim. Those are children that are non-desirable, non-proper. They're undesirable type children. Omar Rav Iko Bar Chinino, my craw. What is the posuk that indicates this? Gam below das nefesh lo tov. The term below das, this is from the posuk that we quoted before, where the posuk had said, following this below das means without approval, it went on to say, otz peraglayim. That's Gam below das nefesh lo tov ve'otz b'raglayim chote. This is the pasuk we referred to before, and so we see that raglayim being associated with intimacy and with lo das means without her approval, nefesh lo tov, that will result in children that are not desirable. Tanyo nami hochi. We have a Tanaic source that supports this. Gam below das nefesh lo tov. That is the pasuk we just read. Zeh hakufa ishto l'dvar mitzvah. This is a reference to someone who forces his wife into intimacy. And Rashi says, nefesh lo tov, lo toivim habonim hana'asim belodasu ish shayabala otz b'raglayim. The children that result from intimacy, where the woman was pressured or forced into it, those kind of children will be lo toivim habonim, undesirable type children. The source goes on, the otz b'raglayim chote. This is again a lotion of tashmish, a lotion of intimacy. Zeh haboyo v'shoina. This is a reference to someone who has intimacy on the same occasion. We'll say he does it twice. Rashi says she matricha. This causes her troubles her. It's too much for the woman. The Gemara asks, Amy, what, doing the act twice, is that a problem? Anyone who wants to have male children, and in the throughout the Shas, you find this being considered something positive, to have male children, so the Gemara suggests, do it twice. Yivol Vishna, perform the act of intimacy, and after that, do it again. So that's, it seems from here that it's positive. Lo kashya, there's no contradiction between these two sources concerning boyo v'shoyne. Kan lidas, kan shelo lidas. Where it's lidas, where the woman wants it, she approves of it. So that's the second point that was made, that it will have bon of zecharim. However, where it's shelo lidas, so then it will be the what we mentioned before, that he's considered a sinner. The idea of having male children as a result of a second act of intimacy on the same occasion, Rashi gets into the reason or the explanation behind that, but for our purposes we'll just leave it as a given. We continue in the Gemara with what we see marked off as a long point. Following the long point, there will be a question that's raised, which we also classify as a long question. The Gemara continues with the issue of intimacy. Omer Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer Rabbi Yoinoson, Kol Isha Shetovas Ba'alo Lidvar Mitzvah, Havion Lo Bonim, Shafilu Bedoro Shel Moshe Lo Hoyu Kamosam. A woman who's tovas means a... Now here we're going to translate literally, but we're going to wait for further elucidation and clarification as we go on in the Gemara. So first, the literal translation. The statement, this halacha of Reb Shmuel is saying that a woman who tovas means she seeks out, she puts a claim in to her husband for the act of intimacy. In other words, she verbally requests from her husband to experience the act of intimacy together. So that's tovas. She demands from her husband the intimacy. So havyon lo bonim, she will merit having children of such a high quality that even in the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu, which was considered a very lofty time, they didn't exist. In other words, some unbelievably high quality children. And now the Gemara points this out. And you can see we have a bow tie marking around the word de'ilu, which will contrast these two generations, the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu and that which is reflected by a woman who was tovas by the Lidvar Mitzvah. De'ilu b'dor shel Moshe, regarding the generation of Moshe, the pasuk says, Havu lochem anoshim chachomim unevoinim v'yidu'im l'shivtechem. Present to the people that are wise, and nevoinim, the term nevoinim or bina has to do with as Rashi says, mevinim dover mitok dover, that they are able to extrapolate or draw inferences from given information. In other words, it's not just that they understand what they see, but they can also draw conclusions from that which they see. That's mevin dovar mitok dovar, to understand something through something else. Uksiv, and so that the pasuk has the Almighty saying, gather men that are chachomim and nevoinim. Uksiv v'akach es roshei shivtechem, and when it comes to the actualizing of that request, it says, Moshe Rabbeinu says, and I gathered v'akach es roshei shivtechem anoshim chachomim v'yiduim, and I gathered wise men. However, v'ilu nevoinim lo ashkach, but we don't find that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to find people who were nevoinim. They might have been chachomim, has to do with a different level of wisdom, a certain type of wisdom, of, let's say, familiar with facts, and yiduim were well-known, distinguished individuals, but it doesn't say nevoinim. They didn't have that characteristic of being meivin dover l'toch dover. V'ilu gabi Leah, but with regard to Leah, who you will see shortly represents the case of an Isha Tovas Balu Lidvar Mitzvah, what does it say about Leah? And specifically we'll see regarding Yisachar, her son. It says, K'siva teitzin Leah likroso, Leah went out to greet her husband Yaakov, v'tomer, and she says, Elai tovo ki sachar sachaticha, you will come unto me because I hired you. That involves in the Torah describes what that is a reference to, but for our purposes, you see, she is requesting him to be with her for intimacy. That's the main point for us right now. Uksiv, and it says regarding the outcome of that intimacy, the child Yisachar, the tribe of Yisachar, was born, and it says regarding the people of Yisachar, Mibnei Yisachar, Yodei Bino, Lo Itim, Lo Das, Ma Yaseh, Yisrael, Roshem, Osaim, Chachem, Alpiem. And we've dashed underlined the word Bina, meaning the people of Yisachar had this characteristic of Nevoinim, of Bina, of being Maven Dover L'toch Dover. So this is the basic point that Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni was making before in the name of Rav Yonason, that a woman who is Tovas Bala Lidvar Mitzvah will have highly desirable type children. The Gemara now asks a question. Is that all? Is that really so? Eini v'omar Rav Yitzchok Bar Avdimi. Rav Yitzchok teaches Eser Klolus Niskalo Chavo. Chavo, as a result of the original Aveira, the sin of eating from the Eitz Hadas, so she was cursed, and it says here she was cursed with 10 curses. Now we have a bracketed section, and the brackets enable us to go immediately to that which is germane, relevant to our discussion. So let's do the skip initially. You can see we have a bracket length indicator as well. It says after the brackets, quoting from the Psukim in Sefer Bereishis, when Chava was cursed, it says, V'hu yimshol boch. What does that mean? Melamed shu'isha tovas b'leh, v'ish tovea b'peh. They zuhi mido toiva b'noshim. That the man is someone who is entitled, so to speak, where it's acceptable for him to seek out the act of intimacy in an active fashion. Bepeh means by speaking, indicating his desires, verbalizing his desires. Whereas the woman, she might desire it, but by the woman, she doesn't verbalize it. She thinks about it, and it would be embarrassing or degrading for a woman to seek it out, to verbalize it. So we see from here that it's part of the klolos. In other words, that it's a woman is not expected to be tovas bepeh. Maximum is tovas belev. So how is it that before you said that being tovas bepeh on the part of a woman is something that's so desirable? The Gemara will answer, ki kuamrino, that which Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonason said before, that tovas advar mitzvah is something that will result in highly desirable children, that's demartze artsuye kamei. Not that she actually verbalizes the request to have intimacy, but she does things that suggest. Rashi says, Mar'e lefonov inyonei chibo. She demonstrates in his presence acts of love or of desire, which will clue the husband into her wanting intimacy. But to verbalize it in a outward or bold fashion, that's something a woman should not do. We have a bracketed section that we skipped. Let's go back to that. The Gemara had mentioned that there were 10 klolos, that 10 curses that that Chava and womankind received after the Avera in the Gan Eden. Dichtiv. The pasuk says, El Ho'isha Asher Omar. El Ho'isha Omar. Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, spoke to the woman and said, Harba Arbe. And here what the Gemara will do is break down the pasuk there in Bereishis Gimel and explain what each phrase means. So you'll see that the pasuk section is you'll find it in quotation marks, and we also have a numbering system that accompanies this section. So it says in the Pasuk, Harbeh, I will increase, and there's a double expression, Elu Shnei Tipei Domim. This is a reference to two drops of blood, two types of blood, Achaz Dam Nida, V'Achaz Dam Besulim. These are woman-related issues of blood, and one concerns blood of the menstrual cycle, the Dam Nida, and one is the Dam of the initial act of intimacy, where a woman conducts intimacy for the first time. There is a membrane of this, of skin that's inside the woman at that particular point, the point of intimacy, and it's ripped away, and it causes pain, and there are other halachas that are associated with the Dam Besulim, but for our purposes, there are two issues of blood that are characteristic of a woman, and also cause a certain amount of, whether it be pain or restriction, and that's part of these klolos. So we accounted so far for two klolos. We continue, remembering that we're trying to find 10 in total. Etzvonech ze tzar gidol bonim. That's the pain associated with, or the pain or the stress associated with raising children. There's more to say on that particular topic. If I'm not mistaken, there's a Tosis in Masechet Sanhedrin that disagrees with Rashi. It's an argument as to what that is a reference to, but for our purposes, we know that the woman is most involved in the upbringing of children during those early stages. And so she bears the brunt or experiences the stress of tsar gidol bonim. The heronech is in the pasuk. That is the literally heronech is a time of pregnancy. Ze tsar ibur. That is the pain associated with pregnancy. Be'etzef tel dibonim, through literally sadness or pain, you will bear children. Kimashmo, as it sounds. In other words, it's an extremely painful experience, physically painful in bearing and in delivering a child. When a woman is giving birth, it's very painful. So that's how the pasuk can be taken on its literal level. That's the fifth curse. Number six, ve'el ishech teshukasech. Melamed sho'isha mishtokech. The word mishtokech has to do with desire. So the Pasuk is, this pasuk is telling us that it teaches us that a woman mishtokekes el baila bishal she yotze l'derech. When a man, when a husband is about to go on a journey, the woman all of a sudden or particularly at that point, she does a great craving or desire for him becomes aroused, and that for the woman is something that's unpleasant to deal with. Number seven, v'hu yimshol bach. This is the right way for a woman to behave. However, it does impose on her a restriction where she can't say what she really feels, so to speak. And hence we see the end of our long question that how can you tell us before that being tovas bepeh results in wonderful children seeming indicating that tovas bepeh is a positive thing when we see it's not so. So the Gemara answers, as we saw before, ki kwamina Rabbi Yonison before, who said that one will have children that even in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, people like that didn't exist, as demarze artzui kameh. She indicates in an active fashion her desire, but she doesn't actually verbalize in a literal form, a literal fashion, I want to have intimacy. The Gemara, we're going back to the issue of the klolos. We said originally that there were 10 klolos, but at this point we've only counted 7. Hani sheva havyon. What about these are 7? Where are the other 3? So the Gemara completes the list. Ki also Rav Dimi Omar. When Rav Dimi came, he gave his suggestion for this. How do we complete the list of 10? So number 8, atufa ke'evel. The Rashi explains boisho lotzeis b'roisha pura. A woman in general is embarrassed to walk out with exposed hair. You'll find very interestingly that in certain societies, even to this very day, even all women, regardless of whether they're married or not, when technically speaking, the halacha demands a married woman to have her hair covered, but in general, you find in certain societies that might reflect something that is true from, you know, it's an old natural tendency of women to cover their hairs, even girls covering their hair. And that's atufa, literally is cloaked like an evel. Evel is someone who is in mourning. Someone who is in mourning, there is this concept that you find in the Gemara called atifa sarosh, which has to do with wrapping or cloaking oneself. So Rav Dimi is pointing out that women in general are embarrassed, or expected to be embarrassed, we'll say, to walk out with exposed hair. Umenuda mikol adam. This will be explained later in the Gemara, and Rashi already clues us into what the Gemara will say later, having to do with a woman is can allowed to marry only one man, whereas a man can marry from the original Torah perspective, not in terms of applied halacha, but a man is not restricted to one woman. And number 10, v'chavusha bebeis ha'asurim, and this will be explained as well, but Rashi tells us at this point it's a reference to the idea that a woman's honor is through her, let's say, refraining from public exposure. Kol kvoida bas melech pnima. The Gemara now looks into some of these expressions. My menuda mikol adam. What does that mean? Ilei mishum da osir lo yichud. That she menuda is literally someone who is ostracized or excommunicated from other people. If you are to take that to mean that she is prohibited in being alone with another man, well, iunami osir le yichud. It's the same prohibition for the man to be alone with a woman, other than, of course, his wife. This is a reference to the Isur Yichud. So that's not something that's characteristic of a klola to the woman, per se. Elo de Asira Lebe Trey. The explanation of Menuda Mikol Adam means that it's also for one woman to have concurrently two husbands, which is not the case with regard to a man who, from a Torah perspective, not applied rabbinic law, which is something that's much more modern in this, historically speaking, but from the Torah perspective, a man is entitled to have concurrently two wives. B'masnisa tana, in a Tanaic source, we have an elaboration on the issue of the list of klolos. It says, Megadelis Seor Kililis. Lilis is the name of a demonic figure who apparently is characterized as having long hair. So the women grow their hair like that. The Yosheves Umashtenis Mayim Kebehema, in relieving herself, she crouches like an animal. Venasis kar levailo, and literally she serves as a pillow for her husband, which is a reference to the positions that the man and woman assume during intimacy, where the standard procedure would be that a woman is below and the man ascends to be on top of her. So that is, as far as the brisa is concerned, these are the additional three klolos that we were looking for. But the question then is, why were these not suggested before? V'idoch, this is a reference to Rav Dimi, he didn't quote these. Hani shevach hu lo. It says, these are actually positive things. And Rashi says across from here, shevach hu lo, yosheves u'mashtenes, this idea of her sitting and relieving herself and urinating in a seated, crouching or seated form, is something positive. But sni'us, it's something that is done with, it's an expression or an action of modesty. V'eino chasero klumbadover, she doesn't lose out by doing that. It's not some type of restriction that's imposed upon her. V'nasis karla bailo ein lo torach kolkach. If anything, the man's efforts or exertion is greater than the woman when it comes to that act of intimacy. She relies, she remains in a lying position where he has to arise to be on top of her, which is more effort. We then continue in the Gemara. So, the Omar Rav Chiya, my Tichtiv, Rav Chiya, in addressing this issue, or not, Rav Chiya says regarding a woman or regarding animals in general, it says, Malfeinu mi bahamois oretz umeoif ashamayim yichak menu. Malfeinu mi bahamos, Malfeinu has to do with learning from. We can learn from animals. What is that? What are we learning from animals? Zu preda, this is a reference to the mule, shekorasu mashtenes mayim, that crouches and only then urinates. And as we saw before, this is something considered an act of modesty. Umeoif hashomayim yechak menu, and we can increase wisdom from studying birds. Ze tarnagol, this is a reference to the chicken. Shemefayis v'achakach boil, the chicken, before it engages in intimacy, the rooster is mefayis. Literally, it appeases the hen. And Rashi explains on this. Rashi says shemefayis holech u'poshe knofav v'upius. It extends its wings. It does a type of, call it a type of dance in the presence of the hen, and that's its attempt to allure the hen for intimacy. So we are to learn from that. And what does that mean? We are to learn from that. So the Gemara will explain this a little bit more later. Omar Rav Yochanan, Ilmolei lo nitna Torah, if the Torah was not given in a formal and formally and dictated, Hayinu lemeidim, we would learn from different members of the animal kingdom, tsnius mechatul, we would learn the modesty from the cat. Now, the modesty of the cat, Rashi has a couple of pshatim, and the Rabbeinu Chananel also has a pshat. Rashi says sheinu matil rei b'fnei adam, it doesn't deposit its solid waste in the presence of people, and it's mechaset se also, and when it does leave its waste, it covers it up. And the Rabbeinu Chananel mentions that on the top of the next Omid, on the top of Kuf Aleph, Omid Aleph in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he says that actually we should correct ourselves. The commentary down at the bottom of this Omid regarding the Tznius that says it's Eino Boil Ella B'Mokom Seser. When it engages in intimacy, it tries to find a closed, a more, I'd say, concealed location for that. We turn back to the Gemara. V'gezel mi nemola. This is a reference to theft. We would learn the theft, obviously the need to avoid theft from the nemola. Nemola is often translated as an ant, and it's pointed out that each ant gathers its own food supply. It doesn't take from its fellow ant. The arayas, the rules of morality, mi yona. We learn from the yona, often translated as a dove. The nature of that particular bird is that it has a designated partner. There's a man, a husband and wife, so to speak, which is, generally speaking, not seen in the animal kingdom, but in the case of the Yonah, it chooses its mate, and it's faithful to its mate. So they don't have, that's a reflection of a high moral standard. Derech Eretz, mi tarnagol, proper decorum, proper behavior, etiquette, we learn from the chicken. Shemefayis v'achak boil. It first appeases its mate. It's the and then it engages in intimacy, and that's considered derech eretz, as opposed to behaving in a more, I'm hesitant to use the word animalistic fashion, but in the realm of outside the realm of tarnagol, the animals simply just jump into the act. But we are to learn from the tarnagol and not do that, but rather appease the mate beforehand. Umay mefayis law. So, how is pius to be accomplished? So the Gemara explains how does this pius take place? Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Hachi ko Amar La. Thusly he says to her, Zavinino lech ziga dematu lech ad karech. I will buy for you a coat that will be very long and reach your legs. Lebosar hachi, and after the act, he says, Omar law, he says to her, Nishante lekarbalte deutar negola. According to the Gemara, this is we're dealing with something that's, of course, of an analogy. The rooster is telling the hen, Lishante lekarbalte. Karbalte often is a reference to a crown or a crop that's on the head of certain kinds of birds. So the rooster, as is quite well known, has a crown to it. So he says, let its crown be cut off, which is, the crown represents the honor of the rooster. Let it be cut off. If he has the means and doesn't actually buy it for you, buy this coat. The approach we presented just now was, of course, a literal translation. There are things being hinted to over here, and it all falls into the realm of the required modesty and etiquette with regard to the realm of intimacy. There is a Rabbeinu Hananel that we had mistakenly mentioned earlier, but now is the time, at the top of Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, regarding this last point of the Lishante Lekarbalte, he says on the third line from the top of Kuf Aleph in the Rabbeinu Hananel on the outside margin, you can see V'nishba lo, he swears to her, in Tasig Yodo V'lo Yase lo, if he, Tasigo, he literally means he acquires, means he has the means to purchase that coat, and he doesn't do so, he wrote so. Then he's cursing himself that a cat should come and cut off its head, the rooster's head, for not having fulfilled that which he promised to do. Before we close, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.